Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A federal judge temporarily halted Homeland Security from deporting the family of Mohammed Solomon, the suspect charged in the Boulder firebomb attack at a Jewish rally Sunday. ABC's Trevor Ault has details.
Now, federal officials had said once they took this family into custody, they were being processed for an expedited deportation. In fact, we've seen from one member of Congress that he had said that they were going to be deported to Egypt as soon as this week. But now, according to this judge's order, that is on hold, at least temporarily, until there can be some kind of hearing.
Solomon due back in court tomorrow to face additional charges. Authorities say the number of those injured has risen to 15. Debate over the massive budget bill continues in the Senate, but holdout Republicans could delay passage. President Trump also meeting with key lawmakers today, trying to shore up support. And Elon Musk is now calling on Americans to kill the bill. Stocks finished mixed due to tariff concerns. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Democratic state lawmakers are reintroducing gun control legislation after Republican lawmakers on the Joint Committee on Finance removed the measures from Governor Tony Evers' biennial budget proposal. The legislation is currently being circulated for co-sponsorship and included measures to expand background checks, institute red flag laws, and create a mandatory 48-hour waiting period to purchase a handgun. Democratic lawmakers say the proposal is meant to save lives, while Assembly Speaker Robin Voss referred to it as overreaching restrictions. Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources officials are sharing safety tips for residents as Canadian wildfires cause air quality issues across the state. Residents are reminded to stay inside as often as they can to limit their exposure, especially if they fall into a sensitive group like children, the elderly, or people with respiratory issues. If you do need to go outside, you should keep an eye on any shortness of breath or coughing. Residents who have respiratory issues like asthma could also consider using their inhaler before heading out. The City of Rice Lake's oil recycling station on Allen Street officially closed on Tuesday after 45 years of operation. City officials say they made the decision to close the site because they were unable to continuously monitor it after it moved to Allen Street. Residents from outside Barron County often used the oil recycling station, but also often spilled some of their oil or deposited chemicals they should not have been depositing. Area residents who need to recycle their oil should now do so at the County Waste Oil and Antifreeze Collection Facility in Barron. Health officials say two new cases of measles have been confirmed near the Minnesota and Wisconsin border. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, the cases are unrelated to each other but raise concerns about potential exposure in the area. One case originated in Washington County near the state border, and health officials say that individual was likely exposed on a domestic flight. The other case involved a child at the Mall of America, and health officials are warning anyone who is at the mall on May 24th to look out for possible symptoms. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Warhawks are national champs. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Mike Clemens. With a 21-5 victory today over Messiah, UW-Whitewater clinched the Division III College Baseball Championship. It's the Warhawks' third title and first since 2014. Coach John Vodenlich said it's an exciting moment for the program.
I'm happy for a lot of reasons. First of all, the university. Everyone who's ever donned a Warhawk uniform. Coach Clawwitter, who never had one of these before. But most of all, I'm really excited for these young men.
Whitewater allowed just 19 runs in five games of the College World Series, putting up 20 runs of their own in the clinching game. The Warhawks finished the season at 49-6 with all six losses coming against fellow WIAC teams. Milwaukee defeated Cincinnati 9-1 today to take two of three games in the series. Jackson Churio had three hits, including a two-run home run to help spark the Brewers' offense. Milwaukee heads back home to play the San Diego Padres starting on Friday. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A stray evening shower, otherwise partly cloudy tonight, low 50s. For tomorrow, starting with sunshine, then increasing clouds for the afternoon, some showers possible into the evening, a high in the upper 70s. A better chance of rain Friday, high upper 60s. Currently at 75 degrees.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
State Senator Keldon Royce.
The vast majority of people on Medicaid are already working, and it is Medicaid that makes it possible for them to work. People who are disabled or have chronic illnesses, and without that health care, they would be out of the workforce. They would have no ability to participate in the economy, and now they can. Medicaid is one of the greatest workforce programs this country has ever built, and they are trying to dismantle it, and with it, they're going to take people's lives and economic security.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Thursday, we'll be joined by Congressman Mark Pocan. We'll see how the big, beautiful bill has been more like a truly terrible train wreck and get more updates.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Wednesday. Hope your work days are ending well this afternoon or starting off on a good foot if you are working second or third shift. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the great privileges of this job that I do with each and every one of you is that I get to talk to some really interesting people. And my most favorite people often are not just the academics and the data scientists, but those who have served as public servants, serving our country, our cities, our states. And we have a distinguished public servant joining us today. Her name is Ambassador Cynthia Eifert. She has had a storied career as a senior foreign service officer that spanned just under 40 years, excuse me, including 3 years of service as the U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Angola. Now, I usually don't read people's resumes in full, but I'm going to do this. And Cynthia, I beg your forgiveness. You know all that you have accomplished, but our listeners don't, and I want to share with them. You currently are the President Emerita of the Public Diplomacy Association of America. You've served on the boards of the Decor Bacon Foundation, the Public Diplomacy Council, the Women's National Democratic Club. Your service goes on and on after your retirement, but let me tell people a bit about your experience as a foreign service officer. Again, you were the ambassador to the Republic of Angola for 3 years. You were deputy commandant for international affairs at the U.S. Army War College. You are an associate at the Institute for the Study of Diplomacy at Georgetown University, where you did that for 2 years. And you joined the Foreign Service back in 1977. You then served in Yugoslavia for, as I count it, 4 years. You served in the German Democratic Republic. For those who are not old enough to remember, it didn't used to just be one Germany. You served in the German Democratic Republic. You've served in Mozambique. When you worked in Vienna, Austria, you were on the staff of both the U.S. Embassy and the U.S. delegation to the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, as well as volunteering for temporary duty in Somalia with the U.S. Liaison Office. You were the Deputy Counselor for Public Affairs at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, ladies and gentlemen, from 1997 to 2000. And then you were detailed to the Organization for Cooperation and Security in Europe to oversee post-conflict reconstruction of the media sector in Kosovo. Of course, understanding how important a vigorous fourth estate, the media, is in fully functioning democracies. From 2001 to 2002, you were an advisor to the Associate United States Trade Representative, and you directed all public diplomacy and public affairs for the Bureau of African Affairs at the Department of State from August 2002 to July 2004. You hold degrees from Georgetown, Duke, and the National Defense University, and you've received many State Department Meritorious Honor and Superior Honor Awards. You've received an honorary degree from the U.S. Army War College and a decoration for distinguished civilian service from the U.S. Army. May I begin, Madam Ambassador, by just simply saying thank you for a lifetime of service to our country.
Well, I have to say that it was a wonderful career, and I've had great fun. And if I can put a little question thing in right now,
please.
If I can ask your audience, if they're interested in the sort of work of being overseas, of representing the country, we very much need people from the Midwest, because there are a lot of people from the two coasts, people who have parents who are in the Foreign Service, but the process is very fair and very open, and we need representatives from the Midwest. I grew up in Detroit. I knew nobody in the Foreign Service, never even heard of it until I found a secondhand book, and it struck me as maybe a good idea. So please, if any in your audience would like to join the Foreign Service, it's a long process, only about 1 out of 100 ever get in, but you can find out all about it at our website, www.state.gov/careers. So please think about it.
I love the plug for public service. I often refer to my time as a public servant as the most deeply meaningful of all of my work experiences. When we were preparing for the show, Cynthia and I, you talked a little bit about I had gone through the first two stages to actually enter the Foreign Service before I got distracted by a big, huge case called Enron and decided I was going to work on that for a while. Cynthia, let's start. I want to talk about and give some life to what diplomatic work is. I think people think spies, right? That's what they think of. Or they hit the snooze button because they don't get it. So I was hoping, Cynthia, you could help breathe some life and share some of your specific experiences from any one of the very diverse regions that you have worked in over your long career.
Well, let me give you a little interesting story. I was in Angola in my office as ambassador, and my consular officer came in, and she said, "Did you know that 50 Cent, the rapper, is coming to Angola?" And I said, "Oh, that's exciting." She says, "And the impresario that we've had real trouble with is the one who's bringing him." And I said, "Uh-oh. Why don't you get out to the airport and see if you can make contact and come back and tell me what's going on?" So she went out. A couple hours later, she came back and said, "We are in trouble." The impresario, as had been his practice, had taken the passports of all the crew and 50 Cent and had said that they, unless they did a series of extra concerts, he wouldn't give them back. And one of the crew members had leaned over to her and said, "We're not going to be held up here. Can you get guns around here?"
Oh.
Yes, exactly.
Which well, the literally call a diplomatic emergency. Yeah.
Yes. So, and now the truth was, is you could get guns because it was right after the Civil War and they were everywhere. And I said, "Well, I think we better step in here." So I called the impresario and I said, "You people need to go to the U.S. from time to time with visas in order to be able to recruit people, correct?" He said, "Yep." I said, "If you don't give those passports back to 50 Cent and his crew immediately, you and anyone associated with you will never get a U.S. visa as long as I'm around." And he said, "Oh, no, no, there's been a misunderstanding." Okay, problem two, she said, "That's great. His people are happy. They're at the hotel. But they're planning to go to the hospital tomorrow." And she said, "The trouble is that his crew throw $10 bills around as they walk through any place they go. And there will be a riot. And people in the hospital are going to get hurt." And I said, "Well, I tell you what, why don't we invite him to come and do his thing here at the embassy where I have Marine guards and I can supervise. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay. So we did it. And I said, and not only that, but we are very active participants in President George W. Bush's PEPFAR program against HIV/AIDS. And maybe he will do a little speech about avoiding HIV/AIDS. I said, then we would have an even better thing. So she said, okay, I'll see. And sure enough, it worked. Oh, and we also invited winners from a contest we had given to come and meet him at the embassy. So they're the ones that got the money that was being thrown. Mm-hmm. Any rate, so the next day he came, it worked perfectly. His speech was a little shorter than I expected. He said, have sex, have safe sex. All right, short and pithy. But we then did a long segment on that, which, by the way, went out on every radio frequency across Angola, which was more people we had been able to reach about the message of how to avoid HIV/AIDS. So what I want to do is to just show, well, later the Washington Post had a little comment about what in the world was the U.S. Embassy thinking, bringing 50 cents in to be a representative of the U.S. Well, we hadn't brought him in. We were keeping disasters from happening. Mm. So three things about what this says about diplomatic life. Well, first off, it's always different. But first, our job is to protect American citizens. Now, we were protecting 50 Cent and his crew, but we protect students, professors, visitors,
journalists,
very much journalists, when they come. And that's our number one job when we're overseas. Secondly, we are protecting the U.S.'s economic contracts and how they can make money overseas and make sure that they're treated fairly. So we get to assist in the economic health of the country. And then thirdly, we're often misunderstood, as we were. But all in all, what we do is absolutely essential and is making America really great, if I may use a phrase.
Making America really great. She did that work, continues to do that work, nearly 40 years as a senior foreign service officer. We're talking with Ambassador Cynthia Eford. I have to say, Madam Ambassador, if anyone would have told me that you and I would be talking about 50 Cent, I would have said, I'm sorry, are you talking about Ambassador Cynthia Eford or some other guest? That was literally nowhere, not even close to anywhere on my bingo card this afternoon. I wanted to ask you this. What sort of skills would you describe as a foreign service officer, the skill sets that are needed to do that job? We have just a little bit under a minute, so if you could keep this one short, we're going to go deeper when we get back. But please, go ahead.
Okay.
What are, just very briefly, what are some of the essential skills?
Well, we have to be fluent in cross-cultural communication. We have to be able to analyze a situation, analyze a culture, and figure out how to achieve U.S. objectives within that culture. Mm. We have to be, all of us take our oath to the Constitution. So we also have to have strong moral fiber.
Strong moral fiber, analytical heft, the ability to analyze complex situation accurately, and then advocate for U.S. interest using fluent cross-cultural communications. I want all of us to sit with that for a moment, because I think when we look and we want to ask more of our elected officials, the elected official may set the tone, but they are also ultimately responsible for the folks that fill out the ranks and who they want leading these organizations like the U.S. State Department. And folks up and down the food chain take their lead from who sits at the top of those organizations. We've got U.S. Ambassador Cynthia Eford with her 40 years as a senior foreign service officer, including 3 years as U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Angola. When we come back on the other side, we're going to dig into what the obligations, how does the work of the foreign service officer actually operate? What happens If a diplomat is given an immoral or an unconstitutional directive, we're going to ask the tough questions. We're going to peel back the layers of the onion and make it all the more real for each and every one of you. My name is Maggie Dawn. You got a question or comment for the ambassador? First of all, start with thanks. You can text that 855-757.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win Contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store. Then listen in for the keywords during the 7 and 11 a.m. hour and 2 and 4 p.m. hour. Text in the keyword and get set to win. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our estate with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cow's milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant. 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of her cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Celebrating our dairy farmers with this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Matt and Air on Air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire, Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Speaking of civics, Foreign Service officers know a little bit about that, as well as handling cross-cultural communications effectively to advance U.S. interests. We know this because we're talking with former U.S. Ambassador to Angola, Cynthia Eford. She has nearly 40 years of experience as a senior Foreign Service officer. She's served basically all over the world, and she's here to share some of her wisdom with each and every one of us. Welcome back, Madam Ambassador. Thank you again. And because the stories of Foreign Service officers are so fascinating, before we moved on to like the deep thoughts, I wanted to ask you, I know you have another story that you wanted to share with our listeners. Please.
Well, I think one reason I want to talk about this is because of the really draconian cuts in global health that are being announced. When I was in Angola, the Minister of Health from there had asked if he could take a phone call. And so he did. And when I came in, he had his head in his hands. Mm. And I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "There's a disease that has broken out. And I just got word that it is a hemorrhagic fever, like Ebola, but worse. It's called Marburg." And I said, "You know, the U.S. will be on your side." And he looked at me and he said, "Yes, we always count on you." And as a result, we had been working on a malaria program with them, and we were able to let that lab be used to follow up the cases of Marburg. And the reason that none of your viewers have heard, or your listeners have heard about Marburg, is because we were able to work with the Angolans to contain it. There are 168 embassies around the world, and we are early warning posts for health problems, for security problems, for military problems, for all these things that Washington, well, they'll get a tiny bit of a cable. But if you get rid of those embassies, there is no early warning. If you get rid of global health, there's nobody finding the next endemic disease that might come to our shores.
It's truly, truly stunning, the fact that the human relationships, the human intelligence, right, which is the backbone of all diplomacy, it relies on credible actors. It relies on people knowing that if they're speaking with Ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Ambassador Eford, that what she says and the representations that you make on behalf of the United States will hold true. I want to ask you, before we get into, like, what do you do if you get a directive that you think is a terrible idea? I just want to hold that for a second, because one of our listeners has a question that relates to our discussion here. Annie in Watertown asks this question: after watching the impeachment hearings of Donald Trump and watching in other hearings amazingly qualified intelligence and senior foreign service officials, frankly, have their words twisted, misconstrued, otherwise disrespected, and being misunderstood. How does this have an impact on recruitment? Does it have an impact on morale? Or is the Foreign Service officer, especially the experienced Foreign Service officer who may be testifying before Congress, inured to that? In other words, mission-centric, we keep moving, and it's water off a duck's back. How is this, you know, some of the overt disrespect, I'll just say it that way, how has that impacted the State Department and Foreign Service officials?
Well, we're human beings, and we're out in often difficult places, and our families are out there with us, also suffering from being far away from family and so forth, although often we have decent living situations. So, yes, it hurts to find that you're not respected, that the work you're doing isn't. But on the other hand, we signed up to serve whichever administration the American people decide to put into power. And as a result, we have, our first goal is to advise that administration as to what will really work. Where are we? What can we do? But then, once the decision has been taken, whether it's a decision that we agree with or not, it is our job to loyally follow the results. And the only option, if you think that what you have been asked to do is illegal or unconstitutional or just plain too dumb to bear, you can resign. But the Foreign Service is not partisan, just like the military. And we, I hope, are continuing to resist any effort to make it partisan. I'm not hearing you right now.
My apologies, Madam Ambassador. When you and I were discussing in preparation for today's interview, and you were going through these fundamental sort of tasks, the meat and potatoes of being a senior foreign service officer, and you were explaining it is to give your best objective apolitical advice, to write it down if that's necessary, to express disagreement respectfully and appropriate, to resign if you believe something is illegal, but that those are very rare occurrences. And even if you're given a directive that in your personal viewpoint might not be the right decision, you faithfully execute that order that has been given you. It occurs to me that there are so many expert professionals up and down the ranks of public servants that abide by a very similar code. We are human beings. We have our own beliefs, but we show up and we do our jobs to the best of our ability. And we do so faithfully every day. Folks, we're talking with former ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Cynthia Eford. She's going to return on the other side. We're going to continue this discussion. Please stay with us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has reported over 50,000 wild turkeys were harvested during the spring hunting season. According to preliminary data from the agency, the statewide hunter success rate was about 22%, with nearly 230,000 turkey authorizations sold. The mark also represents the fifth time the state crossed the 50,000 turkey mark since the agency began managing the hunt in 1983, and officials expect it to be one of the highest spring turkey harvests of any state in the country. Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski has announced the launch of a free online database of public government documents in an effort to promote transparency. According to a press release on Monday, the goal of the database is to give residents all the information they need to stay up to date and hold the government accountable. The public documents include things like executive orders, pardons, and a variety of other official public records. They will also be able to order certified copies of the documents for a fee directly from the website. A Hayward man has been charged after a traffic stop allegedly led to the recovery of nearly 500 grams of methamphetamine. According to court documents, 44-year-old Jeffrey Snyder was charged in Barron County Circuit Court with felony possession with intent to deliver methamphetamine and four misdemeanors. Authorities say a Flock camera flagged Snyder's car before they initiated a traffic stop last week, and a K-9 unit alerted them to the potential presence of narcotics. He's facing up to 40 years in prison and a $100,000 fine. An Ashland man has been convicted on charges of distributing methamphetamine and THC to minors in early May. 24-year-old Darren Katona is currently incarcerated on separate drug-related charges and was sentenced to an additional 30 months in prison on the new charges. He also has a pending criminal case in Bayfield County in which he's accused of possession with intent to deliver fentanyl and methamphetamine, as well as bail jumping. The minors in the most recent Ashland County court conviction were under 14 years old. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. As usual, director Christopher Nolan's new project is ambitious, to say the least. The Inception director is currently shooting his latest project, Odyssey, in Morocco, Greece, and Scotland, just to name a few locations. Nolan loves to take cinematic chances as well, as evidenced by his breakthrough film, Memento. In keeping with the tradition, he is the first to shoot a movie entirely using IMAX cameras. Nolan used the cameras during parts of his film, The Dark Knight, and used IMAX black and white 65mm film during parts of Oppenheimer. Shooting an entire film on 65mm IMAX will be groundbreaking. Recently at Comic-Con, Universal Studios distribution chief made a prediction that The Odyssey will be a, quote, a visionary, once-in-a-generation cinematic masterpiece that Homer himself would likely be proud of, end quote. Cannot wait to see how this turns out. The Odyssey is expected to hit theaters July 27th, 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A stray evening shower, otherwise partly cloudy tonight, low 50s. For tomorrow, starting with sunshine, then increasing clouds for the afternoon, some showers possible into the evening, a high in the upper 70s. A better chance of rain Friday, high upper 60s. Currently at 75 degrees.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
President Trump is unhappy with the organization that helped him pick his Supreme Court justices. Jim Santel will be here to break that down. We'll lighten it up in hour number two with some weather and wine with Brittany Merlot. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. When big events happen around the world, there are tireless, dedicated employees of the State Department, foreign service officials that are there on the ground communicating intelligence, helping to diffuse volatile situations, many of which we never hear about because things don't get worse. It is the 36th anniversary of that moment in Tiananmen Square where a student faced off against a tank. It is those kinds of situations that do make the press that we do hear about, but again, so many more, especially in the areas of public health, that our Foreign Service officials have an incredible impact. We have one of those career senior Foreign Service officials joining us today as our special guest here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Her name is Ambassador Cynthia Eford. She served, again, for nearly 40 years, three of which was as ambassador to the Republic of Angola. One of our listeners texting in on the text lines over the break had a very particular question for you, Ambassador, and I thought I would just start there because it was such an interesting one. And that is, when you were serving at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow back in the late 90s, was the White House, the Russian equivalent of the White House, still damaged from the Yeltsin tanks when you were there, or had it been repaired? I love it. We've got very informed listeners here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, actually, it had been pretty much repaired. I was there during the period, just at the end of the Yeltsin period. He was having real trouble with drink or health issues or whatever. And there was a particular press conference with President Clinton, where President Clinton helped him along. And I have to tell you, I'm sorry to say, that when Putin came on the scene, we thought, aha, this is a much younger person. He's been in Germany, lived there, granted as a spy, but he had been there. Maybe he will be able to retrieve the situation. And of course, what happened was it just got worse. Mm-hmm. Because he just took over the oligarch's graft. And what we see now with the terrible situation in Ukraine is the result of him slowly over the last 20 years developing a technique of creating conflicts, starting in Georgia where they invaded, and now, of course, in Ukraine. And it is because I think we have not sufficiently stood up to him, or that we have wavered in our support for our democratic values.
If I can ask you a follow-up question to that, Ambassador, why aren't we hearing from more retired Foreign Service officials? And if they are speaking in ways, are there places that we, the general public, should be going to look? Or, as it is, and I think one of the norms that I always understood is that most career Foreign Service officials will not speak out and criticize current administrations or politicians because, again, you serve over a career. You serve Republicans and Democrats. You take on this very serious oath duty to be
more apolitical and to not say those things. Is it a unique moment? Do you think your former colleagues, retired Foreign Service officials, should be speaking out more on this moment, especially given, I think, the threat that Vladimir Putin poses to, frankly, many of our allies in Western Europe and democratic order writ large?
Well, actually, I see a lot of former Foreign Service officers, ambassadors speaking out. Generally, they are identified by their current role, the think tank they're working for. One name comes to mind, Ambassador McFaul, former yes. ambassador to Russia. He's often on CNN, I think, or MSNBC. But most of us don't want to be involved in U.S. politics, but we very much want our expertise and our concern and our ability to analyze cross-cultural issues to be able to come to the fore.
Yeah, we've had a few guests on from the Council on Foreign Relations, other mm-hmm. of these think tanks trying to get just myself and other average folks the benefit of your expertise and these years of experience. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Why is understanding the importance of places like USAID and the State Department and what foreign services, why is that so important in this moment particularly?
Well, I think I'd like to speak a little bit about USAID, partly because there's a terrible misconception about how generous we are on foreign aid. Actually, the U.S. puts about 0.2% of our federal budget into foreign assistance. And although most Americans think it's much more than that, people generally think it's about 10%, they, by a strong majority, I read somewhere 62%, oppose us not providing food, health, and security assistance to poor countries. You know, the U.S. is a country of can-do, generous people. And we do care about the human rights. We do care about people being poor. I think it's a misunderstanding. When they made the draconian DOGE cuts in USAID, there were antiretroviral to combat HIV/AIDS people, medicines sitting on the shelves that the contractors were told they could not take off and give to people. And I read some scientists did a study that there are maybe 100 people in the world each hour dying because of our cuts in foreign assistance. And this isn't given only because we care about other human beings. There are great benefits to the U.S. as well. Because we are seen as strong supporters of human rights, of free media, of economic benefits across the society, we're given a seat at the table that no other country has been able to have. And so that gives us a chance to carry out our objectives in a fair and open way. Our work in free media abroad. I remember when I was redoing helping to rehab the media sector, they said, how in the U.S. do you fund media so that it is fair and free and not under the government's thumb? And I said, well, NPR, PBS, for instance, they get contributions from people. And they said, people just give them money? And I said, yeah, that's the American way. The government's money makes them able to reach a wider audience, but it's the listeners who pay for the actual programming. Mm.
To your point specifically, Ambassador Eford, I am sad to share with you and our listeners that an article just posted a wee bit ago today, like three minutes ago in the New York Times, says nearly all remaining Voice of America employees could be fired under a new proposed restructuring. Again, the Voice of America, founded in 1942 to combat Nazi propaganda, to stand up for the Fourth Estate, the free and vigorous press, to hold governments and government actors and elected officials accountable. What you're describing is something that wonky folks will often term soft power. In other words, it's not when the United States sends troops. It is when we have diplomats on the ground assisting countries and governments. It's when people know that we will show up when there is a potential Ebola-like outbreak to help save lives, to help better people's lives across the globe. But this is done because doing so in both the short, medium, and, of course, the long term as well, actually serves U.S. interests. People listen to us. They'll do what we ask when we have needs, when we ask them to do different things to impact geopolitics. Ambassador, am I defining soft power correctly? Is that what people mean when they use that term? And how would you additionally tell somebody, hey, sitting in I don't know, Wausau this afternoon, why this is so important to the person in Wausau or up in the near the Apostle Islands or wherever folks may be across this beautiful state?
Well, it is true. Diplomacy is a very cheap tool, because it doesn't cost very much to have embassies around the world. As I said, 168. What's very expensive is any military action. And I think as a people, we tend to want a quick, fast solution. And oftentimes military solutions seem as though they will be quick and fast. But as we've seen from the war on terrorism, from Afghanistan, from Vietnam War, even the Second World War, we won that war, but the Soviet Union created afterwards, and we had to fight the Cold War that followed afterwards. Mm-hmm. So diplomacy is a cheap tool that can be deployed around the world and that can provide, as I said, protection for our citizens, increased reach of our economic power, and the spread of the kind of prosperity that makes people happy to stay at home rather than wanting to come here. Also, if that nice person in Wausau is planning or has children who are going to go to university, the cost of their university education is partly covered by foreign students.
By foreign students, yes.
Who are paying their full share for the tuition.
Ambassador, I know you're one smart cookie, but that is a little wrinkle that I have talked about with my friends. I know a lot about higher education administration, and most people do not realize that a huge chunk of the operating budgets of every single college and university, public and private, the creme de la creme to smaller, less known universities and colleges, is paid by international students who pay full tuition. Basically, almost nobody else in the United States pays the full load of tuition. International students do. It is an increasingly essential component of revenue for all of our institutions of higher learning. And as we look at an incredible demographic crunch coming in the next 10 to 15 years, there will be fewer people in that age range of 17 to approximately 25. Boy, that is going to pose quite a challenge for higher education. So, again, folks can extrapolate from that what they will, given this administration's dim view and attacks on international students writ large. Ambassador, we have just about a minute left. What do you want Wisconsinites and Americans listening to you today to know? And more importantly, what should they do to help support cheap diplomacy that has a long reach of America's soft power?
I think it's partly just being aware that the diplomatic corps is out there and is doing your business for you. Mm. And whether it's your kid that gets picked up overseas and needs to be supported, or whether it's your business, or whether it's just that you want America to be great because it's good.
America to be great because it's good. My sincere thanks to former U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Cynthia Eford. Such a pleasure. We have some breaking news on the state budget coming up. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are you living with dry AMD? If so, you could be on the road to geographic atrophy, or GA, a condition that leads to retinal cell death and permanent vision loss. But with IZERVAY, you can
slow it down and get it going slower.
IZERVAY slows GA progression by targeting a key source of retinal cell death, which may help preserve your vision longer. IZERVAY, or Avastin Captid Pegol, is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. IZERVAY can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. IZERVAY may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about IZERVAY today.
IZERVAY gets GA going slower.
Visit IZERVAY.com. That's IZERVAY.com. Paid for by Astellas Pharma.
An unsuspecting driver at a Milwaukee barbershop.
I got an apprentice here shadowing me. I'm gonna put this hot towel on, man. About a good 3 minutes, all right?
The apprentice is Donald Driver.
So when you come here, you drive?
Yes.
Your car got seatbelts?
Yeah.
You wear them?
No.
Okay, but why not?
I don't want to.
But do you know you can get a ticket for that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give you a ticket. Bet you wish you buckle up now.
Oh my God.
Donald Driver can't always be there to remind you.
Take it, click it. There we go.
Click it or ticket.
And let's reduce fatalities on Wisconsin roadways. Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT. Summer.
It's our Scotty Summer statewide text to win contest on your local Civic Media radio station. For a complete list of contest rules, log on civicmedia.us/contest-terms. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
This is for people who watched me anchoring the news at Channel 13. My last day at TV 13 was 20 years ago yesterday.
Oh, I'm old now too.
Well, yeah, that was my whole point.
And I was too when you stopped working at TV.
That's what I get all the time now is people come up and they go, oh, were you on TV? I'm like, yeah. And then I go, don't say it. I watched you when I was a little kid. I'm like, yikes.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're all about real news and great conversation. We just finished one of those conversations with former U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Cynthia Eford. My big, big thanks to her, not only for her service, but sharing some of her wisdom and time with all of us this afternoon. We have some breaking news for all of you. It looks like the state's biennial budget is indeed in the crossfire. Budget negotiations have broken down. They are at a, quote, impasse. Those negotiations have been going on for the past few months with Governor Evers' office, as well as Assembly and Senate Republicans. They had reached agreement on cuts, income tax cuts for the middle class. Hey, that's a good thing. Some income tax relief for certain retirees. But Republicans can't find their way to, fund childcare, properly fund public education, as well as our university system here in the state. They don't, I guess, want to keep higher education affordable for regular Wisconsinites. That's what's broken down. They don't want to invest in childcare, public education, and our university system. I just do not understand it. And the statements coming out from the MAGA regime and our state government are simply a wee hard to swallow, if I may say so myself. This is from Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue and Senate Joint Finance Committee Co-Chair Howard Markline of Spring Green. They said this: since April, we have engaged in good faith negotiations with Governor Evers and his staff to establish the outline of a bipartisan state budget. Unfortunately, those talks have reached an impasse. Both sides of these negotiations work to find compromise and do what is best for the state of Wisconsin. Of course, for the MAGA regime, that means tax breaks for rich people. However, we have reached a point where Governor Evers' spending priorities have extended beyond what taxpayers can afford. Saying this while we sit on a $4 billion surplus just sitting in the general fund, I don't know, Lemahue and Markline, maybe spend a little bit on public education. Maybe make the investments in our University of Wisconsin system that Wisconsinites deserve, so that we can all, if we want to, go to university and afford it and not end up riddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars of student debt. They continued, the Joint Committee on Finance has successfully crafted three consecutive budgets that were signed by Governor Evers. We are confident that the legislature will pass a responsible budget that the governor will sign into law. That's my technical commentary on it. Here's the statement on the budget impasse from Speaker Robin Voss and Assembly Finance Co-Chair Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam. We would like to thank Governor Evers and his staff for engaging in good faith negotiations to try to reach consensus on large portions of the state budget. We remain open to discussions, blah, blah, blah. It's just so frustrating. It shouldn't be this hard to do what middle class people need. We need really good public schools. We need more mental health access and treatment for our young people. We talked about that today on the show. We need our university system, the crown jewel of the Wisconsin education system, which used to be a huge source of pride for every Wisconsinite, regardless if you got a degree from a UW system school or not. They don't want to fund our universities. They don't want to pay for childcare. How are you going to have workers if the workers can't afford the childcare? They're not talking about the federal cuts to the Department of Education. They want to, what, not fund public schools here enough? Absolutely unbelievable. My big thanks to my colleagues, Luke Mathers and Dan Schaefer, for breaking this news and sharing it with me so that I could share it with each and every one of you. It is Wednesday, and I always like to promise you a little over the hump and Trump on Wednesday afternoons. We got a little time to do that, a little positivity in the middle of your week and mine, I may add. And my positivity this week is happy Pride, everybody. I am so excited that it is Pride Month, and I am very excited to share with you all that Civic Media will be walking in the city of Milwaukee's Pride Parade. It is one of the longest running Pride parades in the country. It is huge. It is so much fun. The weather looks chef's kiss fantastic for this Sunday. So if you would like to see me and a bunch of my colleagues from Civic Media walking in the Pride Parade, give us a wave, maybe catch some beads and candy. Come on out. It is in the near south side, the fifth ward, Walker's Point area, the near south side of Milwaukee. I think step off is at, I want to say 1 o'clock, but get there early, stay late. Basically, everybody who wants to have fun together in the entirety of southeastern Wisconsin will be in the Pride Parade, including yours truly. Pride Fest kicks off Thursday, that is tomorrow, June 5th, at the Summerfest grounds, or the Henry Meyer Festival Park. There's Ride with Pride. It is a huge Harley Davidson ride that will kick off on June 7th this weekend. I have been in that motorcycle ride. Mom, turn off the radio. She gets nervous when I get on the back of people's motorcycles. Yes, I have done that Harley ride. It is a bunch of fun. And in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin this weekend, the 9th annual Open Door Pride Festival. That's going to be on June 28th, a little bit later. The Sheboygan, we had a fabulous guest, Leah Hibble, on from Sheboygan. She sits on their school board. They're going to have a Pride picnic also on June 28th. Fabulous activities occurring all across the state. What else we got? The Big Gay Pride Market. I love this one. That's going to be in Madison on June 13th, 14th, and 15th, where you can shop at 200 More than 200 queer and queer ally vendors over 3 days. Sun Prairie's Pride Fest, June 28th. Fox Valley Pride on June 21st. Wausau, June 7th. I'll keep sharing these upcoming events as we move through the month. That's going to do it for me. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for Pride. Have a good one, everybody.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The suspect charged in the Boulder firebombing attack at a Jewish rally is due back in court tomorrow to face more charges. Authorities say more victims came forward and the total number of those injured has risen to 15. Mohammed Solomon's family has also been taken into custody, but a federal judge today temporarily halted their deportation.
Now, federal officials had said once they took this family into custody, they were being processed for an expedited deportation. In fact, we've seen from one member of Congress that he had said that they were going to be deported to Egypt as soon as this week. But now, according to this judge's order, that is on hold at least temporarily until there can be some kind of hearing.
ABC's Trevor Ault. A manhunt continues for a Washington state father suspected of killing his 3 school-aged daughters after a court-ordered visitation. Authorities found the bodies were near a campground. Police say Travis Decker could be armed and dangerous. And on Wall Street, stocks ending mixed today. This is ABC News.